Well, welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. It's always fun to get to talk with Father Mitch Packle, one of the smart guys. And look at what we did. We got a whole Smart Friday going for you. We got Jimmy Akin this hour, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, and man who knows many of the mysteries of this mysterious world. And we're going to talk about the end times. People have been asking for this. People have been saying you need to do a show on the end times. And also, there's just a lot of social media chat about the end times and various, not just social media, but I think in the broader media as well, a lot of conversation and this and that about the end times. So who better to get than Jimmy Akin, who knows those books that tell us about the end times, letters to St. Paul and Revelation and the various other prophetic books that can give us some insight into the end times and answer basic questions like, is this it? So thanks for being with us, Jimmy Akin. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Cy Kellett. Happy to be here.
I wanted to pre-record this show just in case, because I thought if the end times happen, you want to have a pre-record ready to go.
But if they happened, then who would hear it?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Well, in any case, they didn't happen in between.
Yeah.
But it's a serious question that many people are are asking. Are these the end times?
Yes, in one sense. No, probably in another sense.
Okay. Can you want to give us those senses?
Sure. So there are passages in the New Testament, like in 1 John, for example, where John says it's the last hour. But that has to be reckoned from God's perspective. If you look in 2 Peter, for example, you'll find Peter pointing out that with God, he doesn't reckon time the way we do. For him, a day is as 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is as a day. So from God's perspective, the reason it's the last day or the end times or the last hour or however you want to say it is because we're living in the final period of world history. God has had historical processes going on for thousands of years, according to the standard scientific account, billions of years. And it all built up here on earth to him sending his son. And when Jesus became incarnate, that ushered in the final age of humanity and of human history. The next major thing to happen is Christ's return, the resurrection and judgment of the dead, and the establishment of the eternal order. So in terms of history, this is the end of history in the sense that it's the last stage of history. But time doesn't mean anything to God, who is outside of time. And so even though this is the last stage, it has gone on already for about 2,000 years, for a little more than 2,000 years, actually. And it could go on for many more. So just because we're living in the end times from God's perspective doesn't mean it's about to happen in our lives. In fact, all the people in the last 2,000 years who have predicted that it would occur during their lifetimes were wrong. So there's a really bad track record for predicting that the end is going to happen in our own lifetimes. It could, but the track record is not a good one for that.
Our number, if you want to ask Jimmy about the end times, if you've got an end times question, if you've got it, there's probably another 10,000 people who've got it. So your question is welcome here. 888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. Okay, so when those very final days do come upon us, the end of the end times, so to speak, what are the kinds of things that we should be expecting?
Well, one of the things we would expect, based on various passages in the New Testament, is a massive apostasy. And we have to be clear about what we mean, because a lot of people don't have necessarily a good handle on the word apostasy. It's not just a falling into heresy or a schism. Apostasy is a complete falling away from the Christian faith where people say, I'm not a Christian anymore. And that is something that has to be judged carefully, because if you look in individual parts of the world, at various points in history, you'll see people who are committing apostasy. I mean, for example, this happened in various regions 1,200 years ago after the Muslim conquests of the Middle East and North Africa and Spain. You had a lot of people who apostatized, but those were local apostasies. Similarly, today in Europe and to a lesser extent here in America, you do have people who are who have turned their back on the Christian faith and no longer identify as Christians. But again, those are local apostasies. If you look at the global picture, we see that the church as a whole is a sixth of the entire human race, and Christians as a body are a third of the human race. And that's, there are more Christians alive now than, and more Catholics alive now than ever before in history. Yeah. So it's a little hard to say we have a global apostasy happening when you've got those kind of numbers. You may have local apostasies in different regions, but it, worldwide, the church is actually larger than it's ever been. Another sign that is expected to precede the end of the world is because of the apostasy, there will be a great persecution of the church. And that of itself is nothing new. There have been persecutions of the church since the first century. So, you know, and especially in the first few centuries, there was a lot of persecution of the church. And there have been various persecutions of the church down through history, like, for example, in France after the French Revolution, or in Mexico after the Mexican Revolution. And so you can't say just because a local persecution is happening that that means we're right at the very end. The way the Catechism of the Catholic Church puts it, the persecution would be so severe that the church will, symbolically speaking or mystically speaking, follow Christ in his death and resurrection. So it'll be like the church is almost extinguished, and then Christ will return to save the church at the last moment. Another sign that we read about, and this is in Romans, St. Paul, it gives us reason to anticipate a large-scale conversion of the Jewish people to Jesus Christ. And he links that to the resurrection of the dead. He says that the turning away, at least as a body, of the Jewish people from Christ in the first century meant life for the Gentiles. And so when the Jewish people finally embraced Jesus as the Messiah, as a body, not necessarily every single one, but as a body, when they do that, they it'll be life from the dead. And so that would seem to indicate that shortly before the resurrection of the dead, there will be a large-scale conversion of the Jewish people. So those are three signs. An intense persecution of the church, led in particular by a figure that's traditionally called the Antichrist, also a massive apostasy and a conversion of the Jewish people.
So one thing I want to clear up before we take a break and then go to calls, 888, by the way, 888-318-7884, our number. I'll include myself among them. You look at certain passages among the things that Jesus says in the New Testament, in the Gospels in particular, and you mm-hmm. go, he seems to be predicting the end times either within his own lifetime or very, very soon thereafter. Is that, how do we make sense of that?
Well, if you study those passages carefully, and there are several of them, but if you study each one individually in its context, it turns out none of them are saying that.
Okay.
For example, there's one passage where he says, there are people standing here. He's talking to the 12 apostles. He says, there are people standing here who will not taste death before they see the kingdom come with power and glory. And that occurs in three of the Gospels, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, the so-called Synoptic Gospels. And in every one of them, all three, it says, and just a few days later, the transfiguration happened.
Right. Okay.
And they saw Jesus transfigured with power and glory. And that seems to be a really strong indicator that's what's being talked about. When Jesus says people will see the kingdom coming with power and glory, he's not talking about the end of the world. He's talking about the transfiguration. And that is something that people who were standing right there, namely Peter, James, and John, they were the three who got to witness the transfiguration, that they didn't die before they saw this miraculous manifestation of the kingdom.
Again, 888-318-7884. We'll take a quick break. We'll let you dial, and we'll come back with questions for Jimmy on the End Times. Lots and lots of folks have been asking us to do devote an entire hour to the End Times. And so I'll tell you what, if you know somebody who would like to listen to it, maybe just let them know so they can go back and listen to it, because they might not be catching it live, but they've been waiting for it. And if you have a question about the End Times, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884.
We're here for you. Call now. Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Magnificat. Published monthly, Magnificat features daily Mass, prayers, articles, and meditations in step with the liturgical rhythm of the Church. On the web at Magnificat.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Why do we need to pray? We don't pray because God needs our prayers. We pray because we need God's grace. And every day when I face the day, I realize I have no idea what I'm doing. And I need God to walk me through my day, step by step, giving me the grace, the counsel, the love, the encouragement that enables me to glorify Him in everything that I do and become the person He wants me to be. Prayer is my lifeline.
What if you could pray the rosary and the people who were giving the talks at each decade of the rosary were people like Scott Hahn and our previous guest, Father Mitch Pacwa, and our own Tim Staples, so we'll be one of them. And figures of that quality, actually from around the world, were helping you to pray a spiritual rosary pilgrimage. Well, that's what's going to be happening very, very soon. And we've been trying to promote this with our good friends and in many ways our partners at Parousia Media down in Australia. You can find out about how to join in the spiritual rosary pilgrimage, a biblical journey through the life of Christ with His mother. They expect at least 25,000 people to participate. And when you see the caliber of men and women who are giving the spiritual talks at each decade of the rosary, I think you're really going to want to participate. So just look for Parousia Media. You could put in Parousia Media Australia. That might help you find it. And if you do that, then you're going to find quite an extraordinary event, worldwide event that's coming up. Let's go to Australia, as a matter of fact. Our good friend Charbel down there in Australia. Charbel, Cy here. Can you tell us a little bit about what's this all about? Tell us about this rosary.
Yeah, thank you very much. It was an idea just during the whole COVID lockdown and people being locked down and losing hope and despair. And we thought, what's something that we can do that's a powerful way to unite people in prayer and praying for our world? We thought, what about an online rosary pilgrimage, and starting on the Feast of Our Lady, leading up to the Feast of the Rosary, we could get different experts around the world to share a little meditation on each of the mysteries. And thanks be to God, I just did a sort of an email out to all the different speakers, and praise God, they all sort of came back saying, it's a great idea, we'd love to be a part of it. And we're so blessed, they've all said yes, and it's just such a huge lineup, and thank God, the blessings are being felt around the world. We've now just hit over 30,000 registrations.
Wow.
And it's climbing by the minute. Praise be to God.
Oh, that is wonderful. 30,000. You were hoping for 20,000. So this is really quite...
That's right.
Yeah. all right. So what do people do if they want to participate in this? When does it start, and how do they participate?
Sure. So all these meditations are pre-recorded. And so they're going to be released each day, starting on Our Lady's birthday. So Tuesday, the 8th of September, Sydney time. And that actually works out to be 3 p.m. Pacific time. So what it is, it's not a live event. It's a pre-recorded event. And we just release the videos each day for 30 days. And so you get access to them. You can watch them anytime you like, throughout the whole pilgrimage. It's completely free. And there's you can put comments for every video, and I encourage people to do that and interact with the speakers and ask any questions they like. And in addition, there's a Facebook lounge we've created, just a private Facebook group, only for those who register. And we've got quite a few thousand in there, in just sharing stories and testimonies about what the rosary means to them, and offering up prayer intentions. And so that's, we're going to do some sort of special live events there as well, live interviews, some live stream rosary as well. And it's just a lot of action happening there too. So all of it's going to be available once they register, starting from September 7, your time, September 8, our time. So, yeah, it's completely free.
Great, Charbel. I'm so glad you called, and we get to promote this again. Tell them where to go again. It's just go to parousiamedia.com, and you can sign up?
Yes, they can do that. Also, in the those who are watching Catholic Answers Live right now on Facebook, there'll be in the comment section a link, and I encourage everyone to press that link, and you'll go straight to the sign-up page. So if there aren't, those are particularly on Facebook, do that. And those that are not on Facebook, then go to parousiamedia.com.
All right. So if you're one of our folks who watches online, whether YouTube or Facebook or anywhere else right now, if you just real quick go to our Facebook feed, you can click and register and participate in the spiritual rosary pilgrimage being brought to the whole world by Parousia Media. I'm sure you will be glad that you did. Charbel, thanks very much.
Thank you so much. God bless you.
God bless you too. Thank you. What a man. They're doing such great stuff down there. Charbel is just doing great things. All right. Well, this hour we're talking about the end times, and there are about a million people who want to talk to Jimmy Akin about it. Jimmy, shall we go to the phones?
Sure.
Let's start with John in Denver, Colorado, listening on 1060 AM. John in Denver, Colorado, your question for Jimmy.
Hello?
Hello, John.
This is John.
Hi, John. You're on the air with Jimmy Akin.
Hey, okay, thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, Jim, the Blessed Mother is appearing throughout the whole world. Garabandal, which is not approved yet, but not condemned. Medjugorje, which is not approved, but not condemned. But a key to Japan, that's an approved apparition. And I don't have the whole prophecy, but it says a fire will fall from the sky, sparing neither priest nor faithful. Majority of mankind will be wiped out, and your only weapons will be the rosary and the sign left by my son. This is approved by the church. Your comments.
Okay, so first let me comment on the first two reported apparitions that you mentioned, Garabandal and Medjugorje. It's not accurate in both cases. We don't want to have an assumption that a particular apparition is not approved yet, but that it will be. The way the church's documents for evaluating, and there's a central document that the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith published in 1978, and it's available on the Vatican website. There are only two judgments that are foreseen. One of them is that the reported apparition, once it's been investigated, the church authorities can either rule that it is of supernatural origin or that it is not of supernatural origin. And there's no third one. The way they're phrased is it's either consistent with a supernatural origin or it's not, but there's not a third one of we've proven that it definitely isn't. So one of them is positive, one of them is negative. In the case of Garabandal, and I'd want to translate, in the case of Garabandal, that one has been investigated by the local authorities, and the ruling was negative on that. And that's been reiterated by the diocese several times. And so I don't foresee that being overturned. There is no movement to get that overturned. There's not a new investigation going on or anything like that. So that one has already received a negative verdict. In terms of Medjugorje, that also has received a negative verdict more than once, but there is a review that the Holy See has been working on that could overturn that ruling, either in whole or in part or not at all. And based on comments that Pope Francis has made, that seems very skeptical of the idea that Mary shows up on a daily basis, on a regularly, predictably, like clockwork, I am not envisioning him saying, I mean, he could, but it doesn't seem likely, given the evidence we have from his own statements, that he would likely say, oh, yeah, Medjugorje, all of the revelations that have been given are of supernatural origin, and they're ongoing. And he has just seemed very skeptical of that kind of position in the past. There are some reports from behind the scenes that have suggested that what might happen is a partial overturning of the existing rulings regarding Medjugorje, that some of the very early apparitions may have more credibility and they might be receive approval, but the later ones may not. And so because the results of this have not been announced, we just have to be careful with all of this. We could see a approval of everything. We could see an approval of some but not all, or we could see absolutely no change. And so we just have to wait and see what the Holy See is going to do with that. But we don't want to presume that, oh, yes, definitely one day this is going to be approved. That may or may not happen. And we need to be open and receptive to whatever ruling the church ultimately makes on this. In terms of Akita, now you mentioned Akita has been approved. That is true. In terms of the meaning of the Akita prophecy, I think, and I've done a careful study of this, I think that what the apparition at Akita was warning against was a nuclear war that would have occurred in the 20th century. And this is in part because we have parallel statements between Akita and Fatima. And Sister Lucia is on record as having said that the consecration that was done in the 1980s prevented a nuclear war. And I think that's also what Akita, which those revelations were primarily in the 1970s, I think that's what they were referring to, a nuclear war that would have occurred, but that was then averted through Marian intercession. And if you'd like to see the case for why I say that, check out episode 99 of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, which is all about Akita. I go through the evidence from the faith and reason perspectives, and I think you could find it very informative and interesting.
Thanks, John. We're talking about the end times with Jimmy Akin. We'll go now to Phyllis in West Monroe, Louisiana, listening on EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Phyllis, your question for Jimmy.
I'm driving, so I don't have the Bible in front of me or anything, but mm-hmm. The scriptures that talk about there will be peace and then the end will come. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm not sure precisely which passage you're thinking about. There is a passage in Daniel that talks about how it's in the 70 weeks prophecy of Daniel that there will be a treaty made, and some people have inferred that you know, as you would expect, would be a peace treaty, and so there would be peace for a period of time, and then further events would happen. There's a big question about how the 70 weeks prophecy needs to be understood, and there have been lots of different proposals about how it should be understood. So there's not a definitive one. Some people would apply it to events even before the time of Christ, like during the age of the Maccabees. The oppressor Antiochus Epiphanes, who demanded that Jews, in order to have peace, you know, worship pagan gods. Well, that's one fulfillment of it. That's, in fact, something that is indicated in the books of the Maccabees, that Daniel's prophecy had a fulfillment at the time of the Maccabees and involving Antiochus Epiphanes. Jesus, in his major prophetic discourse on the Mount of Olives, indicates that it also had an application to the events leading up to the destruction of the temple in AD 70, and it could have one in the future. But in the main, most of the passages in Scripture indicate a time of great trouble before the end rather than a time of great peace.
Thanks, Phyllis. We're talking end times with Jimmy Akin. Your end times questions are welcome. 888-318-7884.
Miss a show? Make sure to catch up by downloading the podcast, available online at Catholic.com.
Bishop Joseph Strickland of Tyler, Texas, is one of the most courageous leaders in the church, known for his outspoken support of unborn life, Orthodox faith and morals, and reforming Catholic institutions. In his groundbreaking new book, Light and Leaven, he offers a forthright perspective on the state of the church today and calls on the lay faithful to meet its challenges boldly. Touching on topics including parish renewal, the centrality of the Eucharist, the need for prayer and silence in a noisy and distracted age, and the battle between good and evil in the church and world, Bishop Strickland's wise insights and evident love for souls will inspire and edify you. To order your copy of Light and Leaven, visit shop.catholic.com today or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Many Catholics ignore the Bible. They say they have the Church instead. But we should embrace sacred Scripture, not just as the revealed Word of God, but as a Catholic work, intimately connected with the Church from the earliest centuries. In The Bible is a Catholic Book, apologist Jimmy Akin shows how the Bible cannot exist apart from the Church, in its origins, in the truths it contains, in its careful preservation over the centuries. Scripture is inseparable from the Catholic faith. This is fitting, since both come from God for our salvation. If you're a Catholic who sometimes gets intimidated by the Bible is a Catholic Book will help you better understand and take pride in this gift that God gave the world through the Church. After all, Catholics are the original Bible Christians. Order your copy of The Bible is a Catholic Book today by calling 1-844-239-4952, visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Since the coronavirus pandemic began, there's been a tragic surge in suicides in our country and around the world. On Take Two with Jerry and Debbie. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, where we talk about the end times. Lots and lots of folks have been wanting to talk about the end times. If you have specific questions about things that are being said or posted on the internet, you're welcome to call with those questions. If you have more general questions about Christianity and its understanding of the end times, you're welcome to call. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. Up next is Vince in Toronto, Canada. Hi, Vince.
Hey, Si, how are you?
Very well. Your question for Jimmy.
Hey, Jimmy. I have a question about Satan in the end times. Quick question.
Okay.
Does he try to make the end times happen, or does he try to prevent it so he can dwell more and do, like, does he try to prevent it from happening so he can cause more damage, or, like, because he knows the Bible, right? Does he read Revelation, so how would he approach that?
I don't know that it's possible to give a definitive answer on this because there's evidence that kind of points a couple of different ways. If you look in the Gospels, you see initially at the beginning of Jesus's ministry, the devil tests him and in the desert, and it's sometimes translated as he tempts Jesus, but if he knows who Jesus is, he knows that he's the all-holy Son of God and therefore will not give in to temptation. And so what's that about? Well, it could be that the devil's just being irrational because, as they say, sin makes you stupid. And so he's just irrationally putting pressure on Jesus just to mess with him, even though he knows full well Jesus is not going to give in to temptation. Or it could be he doesn't know who Jesus is at this point, and that's why he's testing him, to find out will he give in or not. And if he doesn't, if he can resist all these temptations, including world dominion, which is one of them, then he would be the Son of God. So there is evidence that could suggest that at least early on, the devil didn't know who Jesus was or wasn't sure about it. And that's something that there's actually some early Christian literature outside the New Testament on. There's a document known as the Ascension of Isaiah that talks about how when Christ was born, and this document was written about the year 66 or 67 AD. And in this document, it suggests that when Jesus was born, his birth was hidden from the devil, so the devil did not know about him, and that's why the devil ended up crucifying him. According to this document, if the devil had known who Jesus was, or at least known who he was for sure, then he wouldn't have crucified him, because that would have been his undoing. Personally, I'm skeptical of that. I think that by the time of the crucifixion, the devil knew who Jesus was, and he was just being stupid. He was just so hateful of Jesus. He wanted to inflict pain on him, even if it meant his own undoing. And this is kind of the suicidal aspect of sin, that even though you want something so bad, even though it's going to hurt you, you do it anyway. So I think that's just part of the self-destructiveness of sin. Having said that, I think with regard to the end times, something similar is likely to be true. It could be that there will be aspects of the end times that are hidden from the devil, so he doesn't realize what he's doing is playing into that. But I also suspect that the devil will just want to cause pain, for example, to Christ's church, that he will be self-destructive once again, and his hatred for God and his hatred for the church and for Christ will be such that he's willing to try to harm them, even though it's going to mean his final undoing.
Vince, thank you for that question. We're talking about the end times with Jimmy Akin. The number, 888-318-7884. If you have questions about the end times, you're welcome to call. 888-318-7884. Michael in Arlington, Texas, listening on 910 AM. You are up next, Michael. Your question for Jimmy.
Yes, my question is, the book of Revelation talks about the end times. Mm-hmm. There's different parts in there. I've read it, but it's harder for me to understand it. Mm-hmm. It's like the waking of a sleeping giant. You will not know season from season. Nations will rise against nations. And I was wondering if you can kind of help me out and explain to me because I have a feeling that some of that is part of today's.
Okay. Okay, so not all of the passages you mentioned come from the book of Revelation. And in fact, I'm not aware of any Bible verse that talks about waking a sleeping giant. But there are different approaches to how the book of Revelation is understood, and they don't, and the church does not have an official teaching on this. So one can look at it different ways. I can kind of sketch some of the major ways and then tell you which I think the evidence supports, but that's just my opinion. One of the views that is very commonly assumed these days is a view called futurism. Now, everybody who studies Revelation, all the biblical scholars, agree that part of it deals with events in the first century, especially at the beginning of the book. That clearly deals with the first century, when John is writing to seven churches that were in Asia, the Roman province of Asia, which is actually in Turkey, that were first century Christian congregations. So that part's obviously about the first century. Part of it, though, is clearly about the end of time, because we have the resurrection and the final judgment and the eternal order, and that's all at the end of the book. The question is, what about the middle of the book? And that's most of the book. Where does that go? How does that relate to history? Well, one proposal known as futurism says that that's all in our future. So most of the book of Revelation deals with events in our future. I don't think that's particularly well supported by the book of Revelation itself, though, because you don't have a long, if you have this early material in the book that deals with the first century, you would expect there to be some kind of gap indicating a long period of time before you get to the material in our future. And there's not any indication of that happening. When you read the early chapters of Revelation, there's no obvious big jump into the future. It seems like this is just continuing to happen. That leads to another position called preterism. And preterism would say that most of the book of Revelation, that middle part, really is dealing with events in our past that either happened in the first century or the first few centuries. And that seems to be supported by several pieces of evidence. So this is the view that I favor. One of the pieces of evidence that supports it is the fact that both at the beginning and the end of Revelation, John tells his readers that this vision is to happen soon. And you would expect, therefore, the major events of the book of Revelation to happen soon from John's perspective. Also, if that's the case, you would expect, after the bulk of the book of Revelation has gone by, you would expect there to be a gap with a jump over a long period of time into the final events with the resurrection of the dead and the eternal order and everything like that. You would expect there, this is the flip side of the futurism issue, you would expect there to be some indication late in the book that, okay, now we're taking a big leap into the future. And guess what? There is such a passage. If you look in Revelation 20, it talks about a period of 1,000 years where Christ will reign. It doesn't say on earth, it could be from heaven, but 1,000 years where Christ will reign and the devil will be bound in such a way that he can't deceive the nations, meaning he can't stop the advance of the gospel. And so many scholars have looked at that and said, okay, that's now, that's when we're living. We're in the Christian age. The devil cannot stop the proclamation of the gospel. He won't be able to do that again until the end of the Christian age and the great apostasy. And so my personal view is that most of Revelation, the events that lead up to chapter 20, happened early in church history. We're now living in that long period symbolized by 1,000 years. And then at the end of that, things will get really bad and we'll have the second coming and the resurrection of the dead and so forth. There are other views, though, about how Revelation applies to history. One view suggests that it occurs in a series of cycles, each one of which stretches over all of church history. So you don't get just one pass at church history and Revelation. You get several passes over church history several different times in the book. Another view, sometimes called the idealist view, says that Revelation isn't really meant to give us a map of the future at all. It's meant to show us the kinds of things, both good and bad, that will be happening throughout the course of the Christian age until before the end comes. And so there are different views. Personally, I think the evidence supports the view that most of Revelation is in our past and that we're currently living in the so-called millennium, the really long period symbolized by 1,000 years. But that's just me. You may see the evidence another way.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate the call. Jimmy Akin is our guest. We're talking about the end times. If you have an end times question, you are welcome to call. We'll try our best to get you on with Jimmy. 888-318-7884.
Catholic Answers Live with Jimmy Akin is coming right back.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
The Aquinas Writing Advantage Program is part of Homeschool Connections' set of online courses for your Catholic homeschool. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
Isn't it awesome that we today do not recognize his presence in the Eucharist? Is it because we really don't go to him in humbleness of heart and say, Lord, I don't believe, help my unbelief. Lord, I want to see you. I want to recognize you. I cannot live without you. Are we saying that?
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Aikens, senior apologist here at Catholic Answers, is our guest this hour. Lots and lots of folks have asked us to do a show on the end times, and so we oblige. And so if you have a question about the end times, please call 888-318-7884. As I said, we'll do our very best to get you on, 888-318-7884. There is, Jimmy, some anxiety about the end times. There are even predictions being made, some by clergy, of the real imminence of end time stuff, like coming within the month or next month, or I don't know. What do you say
this
about
year?
Yeah. What do you say about that? And to especially maybe to address people who are made very anxious by that.
Yeah, and there are people who've been very concerned. I've gotten emails over the last few months from people, some of whom are having panic attacks. I mean, literal panic attacks. They say they're panicking about this.
Wow.
And I've looked into the question. This is based on reported private revelations, and in particular, the private revelations of one particular priest who some of his YouTube videos have close to 1 million views. So it's been getting out there. I'd say a number of things. The first one is it's understandable that people would be anxious and that they'd have a question about, well, are we living near the end times because of all the craziness that's been going on this year? You know, we've had a global pandemic, we've had civil unrest in various places, especially here in the United States. There may be more of that. There have been international tensions, like with China. And so, you know, it's understandable that people would have this question in their mind. But merely having the question doesn't mean we have a real cause for worry. And what you need to do is take a step back and calmly look at the evidence. Well, as we mentioned earlier, thus far, everyone who has predicted, and there have been a lot of disasters that have happened in history, and people have had this question come up in their minds lots of times before.
Yeah.
And every time there's a new disaster, whether it's a war or a famine or a flood or a volcano or a pandemic or whatever it might be, every time there's a disaster or a series of disasters, people have this question. And some of those people will get the idea we really are at the end.
Yeah.
And some of those people will think God is telling me that we're at the end.
Yeah.
And so far, every single one of those people has been wrong. And so that's kind of our basic frame of reference. Then when we encounter claims that are being reported in our own day, you know, someone says, well, God has told me all of this is about to happen. Well, okay, we don't want to despise prophecies. That's something St. Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 5. Don't despise prophecies, but test everything and hold fast to what is good. So when we encounter such a claim, we don't want to automatically despise it, but we do want to test it. And so I've been looking into the reported revelations of this priest, and I in the future am likely to be reporting on my findings in some detail, maybe on Mysterious World. But what I can say is, even from my preliminary investigation thus far, I do not think this guy's revelations are of supernatural origin. They're just not. And so, and this is an unapproved apparition. And if an apparition has not been investigated and approved by the church, odds are it's not of supernatural origin, because loads of people, in fact, maybe even most people of faith, at some point in their lives think, oh, maybe I just got a message from God.
Yeah.
And they're not all correct. And most reports, it's kind of, I mean, it's somewhat like, I don't want to exactly make this comparison, but it's a little like UFO reports. Most of them aren't actually what people think they are. Yeah. Maybe some of them are, right. But most of them aren't. And the same thing is true of private revelations. And so rather than looking at, oh, this is a very exciting or frightening idea, I need to get worried about it. No, follow St. Paul's advice, test it, and do so not on the basis of what I'd like to be true, but what does the evidence actually say? And in this case, from even just a preliminary investigation, I've already seen enough evidence to conclude this is not supernatural.
Yeah.
People do not need to be worried about this or panicking about this.
Talking the End Times with Jimmy Akin, Mark in Kansas City, Missouri. You're next. Your question for Jimmy.
Hello. I have a question about who the restrainer may be in 2 mm-hmm. Thessalonians 2. And
sure.
In particular, I used to listen to Gene Scott on the radio.
Really?
30 years ago.
Uh-huh.
When I lived in California.
Uh-huh.
And I'm interested. I vaguely recall him talking about who the restrainer was. Because, you know, in the day of the Lord will not come until certain things come to pass, including mm-hmm. the man of lawlessness being revealed. And so there's a restrainer who is restraining the man of lawlessness until it's time for him to be revealed. And it mm-hmm. says then, in 2 Thessalonians 2:7, he who now restrains will do so until he's taken out of the way. And if I recall, Gene Scott used to connect that to Daniel chapter 12, verse 1, when Michael, the great prince, will arise. And he connected, I think, the word will arise with the Greek, that's Hebrew, of course, Hebrew or Aramaic or something, With the Greek, he will be the restrainer until he is taken out of the way. Do you happen to know what Gene Scott's position was on that?
All right, and also, what's your position, Jimmy?
Well, okay, so for people who may not be aware, Gene Scott was a Pentecostal pastor here in Southern California. He was based up in Glendale, which is in the Los Angeles area, and he used to have a pretty big satellite television and radio network. And I heard him too. In fact, it was because I started listening to Gene Scott in the evenings after I came home from working at a restaurant that I actually became a Christian. So even though he was a kind of kooky individual, I've got a little bit of a soft spot for him because it was through his ministry that I ended up becoming a Christian.
That's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah.
It's also a great example of how God can write straight using crooked lines.
Right,
because
right, exactly.
There was crooked stuff about Gene Scott. In any event, I don't know the specifics of his position on this question. I can tell you that this is one of the most mysterious verses in the Bible, because St. Paul really does not give us very much information. He indicates that there's this man of lawlessness or man of sin that is going to be a big villain, and that seems to be connected to the end of the world. But he says something's restraining that and keeping it from happening, and that eventually will be taken out of the way. And he is saying this to the Thessalonians as a way of reassuring them that we're not at the end yet, because some of them were thinking we were. And he's saying, no, 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 we're not there yet because the restrainer is still in place. And that presupposes that people would be able to recognize, if they know what the restrainer is, they would be able to recognize when the restrainer is taken away, and that would be a sign we're near the end. And so that would make me skeptical of the idea that the restrainer is Michael the Archangel, because there is a passage in the book of Daniel where Gabriel, it's not in chapter 12, it's earlier, where Gabriel says that currently Michael is in a holding action with the demonic angelic prince of Persia. But he doesn't talk about Michael being taken out of the way, and he's also talking about events that are in our past. So, but my point would be that even if Michael were the restrainer, it's not going to be obvious to anyone on Earth if Michael gets taken out of the way, because Michael is an invisible entity that we cannot directly observe. And since Paul expects the Thessalonians to be able to observe it when the restrainer is taken out of the way, that is not something that would point to it being Michael. Now, what is the restrainer? Well, unfortunately, Paul doesn't tell us. He did tell the Thessalonians. In fact, he says, "Don't you remember I told this when I visited you?" So he told the Thessalonians what the restrainer is, but he didn't tell us. And that's led to a lot of speculation. A couple of years ago, I wrote a commentary on 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, and I discussed this rather extensively. Unfortunately, I haven't published that yet, so I can't really point you to it. But one of the leading proposals, since we're dealing with the man of lawlessness here, is that it's the rule of law, that before the man of lawlessness can occur and lead his rebellion, there needs to be a massive catastrophic breakdown in law. And so the rule of law would cease to exist, allowing the man of lawlessness to emerge. That's one possibility. It's not the only possibility, but it is one that at least seems to fit the context, because you would be able to observe if there's been a massive breakdown in law, allowing a man of lawlessness to emerge.
Mark, what do you think?
Well, yeah. Well, have you read any, like, Catholic scholars or any of the fathers, early fathers, whether it's Augustine or Aquinas, who addressed Michael in Chapter 12, verse 1, when it says, "Now at that time, Michael, the great prince who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise."
So we're getting real close to the end. I want to be sure I can answer you. I have not read any that address that question. What I can do is do some research on my own and maybe report back next week.
Okay. All right. Let's do that. Jimmy, we'll look into that. Thanks very much particularly thanks for the recollection of interesting character in Gene Scott. Jimmy, tell us, what will you real quick? What is actually on today? Is the new episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World?
Well, it's an interesting story from a psychic who was employed by the government and did some work indirectly for the CIA, who then got hired, he says, by a mysterious group that asked him to remote view the moon looking for alien bases. And it's kind of a weird and wild story, but it's an interesting one. And so this week we tell the story that he claimed happened. And then next week we're going to go into analysis mode and look at, is it credible? Is it not credible? Is it somewhere in the middle?
Okay.
Did he maybe misunderstand some things? But we'll be digging into all that next time. So a two-parter.
And Monday is Labor Day. I just want to let you know, if you're a Monday through Friday listener type, we're going to be here Monday. We got a show. We got a brand new Labor Day show for you. And as I mentioned on a previous iteration of Catholic Answers Live, Jimmy Akin making a special appearance, not as the guest, but doing something he has never done in the history of Catholic Answers Live. You know what I'm talking about, don't you, Jimmy?
I know what you're talking about.
All right. So We'll look forward to that on Monday. Jimmy, thanks again. Thanks for doing this End Times Hour with us. So many people have been asking for it. I hope that it is well received. I think you've done a service. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Well, enjoy your weekend, Jimmy, and we'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Live.